Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Aquadocs, the podcast that keeps you up to date on all things aquatic medicine. I'm your host, Michelle Greenfield. This week, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Amanda Ardente, veterinarian and nutritionist and owner of Ardente Veterinary Nutrition. Today, we're going to be talking about the importance of nutrition in the care for animals in managed care facilities. A simple fix such as lowering the sugar content or serving whole fish instead of filleted fish could make a huge difference for an individual. We have some great cases about dolphins, porcupines, and eels, so let's jump right in. Hi, Dr. Ardente. Welcome to Aquadocs.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm super excited to be here. I'm so glad that you asked me to join you today. I've been a big fan of your podcast, so I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to have you here. And I'm really excited to learn more about nutrition because it's such a critical component of veterinary medicine, yet I feel like we really don't give it a lot of time. So we're going to dive into that. But before we do, do you think you can tell our listeners about a story that helped shape where you are today?
Yes, for sure I can. So when I started veterinary school, I went to NC State and I was certain that I wanted to be one of two things, an ICU clinician for small animals or a zoo veterinarian. Also, I did not like my nutrition class at all. I thought it was a pretty dry and boring topic, especially when taught in a didactic fashion. And so that was not the turning point in my career when we had that class. It didn't happen until later during my fourth year when I had a clinical rotation with Dr. Craig Harms at the Sea Turtle Rehab Center on Topsail Island. And they were having a specific issue at the center with inverse calcium phosphorus ratios in their serum. And Dr. Harms set us students on this quest to figure out why or how this was happening. And what it turned out to be was sort of a simple issue where the fish was getting filleted for these green sea turtles. And so they were eating, number one, a primarily carnivorous diet of, again, filleted fish. And so that just by removing the bones from these fish, they were just getting this inappropriate diet and it was delaying their healing progress, their release from the hospital. And the volunteers there were just doing really what they thought was best for the animals. You know, they wanted it to be easy for them to digest and chew, but that was the end result. And it was so easy. And once we recognized that was the problem, we were like, wow, that nutrition can make such a big impact on these animals that we're caring for without us even realizing. We think we're doing the best that we can. But in the end, you're directly impacting their health and welfare. So that was the turning point for me. And I was like, I have to keep going on this path.
That's amazing. And so how does one keep going on this path? Because I took one nutrition class and it really wasn't that riveting.
Right. Yeah. So once I figured out that that was intriguing to me and that maybe instead of burning myself out in the critical care realm or trying to compete with the other zoo veterinarians or aspiring zoo veterinarians that were going to be out there, I would try and create this little niche for myself. And I approached our nutrition instructor at NC State and approached her with sort of an idea. I want to do this potentially for a career. I don't really know how to get here, but would you help me figure it out? And so we created an internship, a small animal rotating internship that had a nutrition focus to it, where I spent 6 months of my time with her rotating on the service and then 6 months as a rotating intern. And so we created this program and presented it to the college as an option and they bid. And so that was the start. And then after that, I didn't really know the best way to proceed. Should I do a residency? Should I do a further graduate work? And so I just talked to people in the field and tried to assess what the best avenue was. And it seemed like my colleagues in general were going to be probably animal science trained graduate students and not fellow veterinarians, not in the zoo and aquatic world anyway. So it seemed to be on their same playing field. I was going to need a PhD rather than a formal residency training program. So that's why I went the PhD route.
I love how you highlight that you literally developed a new internship program because, you know, everyone on this podcast says, well, there's no right path. You kind of have to figure things out, go in your own way, but you've literally built an internship program because that was what you were interested in. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And you know, it was really the support of the nutritionist at NC State that believed in me. She had had an intern previously that did it in the small animal realm. And I was like, but that's not really where I want to go with this. And I want to take it on the zoo path. And so pitched to her sort of this idea of, I'll do the small animal stuff and I'll do what you want me to do. But would you let me also do this project out at the North Carolina Zoo so that I can apply what I'm learning and make it more along the lines of what I would want to do in the future? And she totally was supportive of that idea. And so really I have her to kind of thank for starting me on that path.
How did you decide on your topic then for your PhD once you finished that internship?
Yes, I found a PhD program at the University of Florida and connected pretty immediately with the aquatic program. Dr. Ruth Francis Floyd brought me in under her wing, introduced me to Dr. Iska Larkin and Dr. Mike Walsh, and I was their first nutrition-interested aquatic graduate student, and Dr. Walsh was super pumped about me being there and having this nutrition interest, which he shared, and he got me hooked up with the National Marine Mammal Foundation to start this project working with dolphins and trying to study the reason why they develop kidney stones under human care more readily than they do in the wild. So, and if there was a nutrition component to that. So that's where that took off from.
So before we jump into what you do now, I have to ask, what were your findings from your PhD? What were you able to see between the kidney stones and nutrition?
So the kind of kidney stones that dolphins tend to develop are purine-based stones. It's the building block of DNA and RNA, essentially. So ammonium urate, urolithiasis. And so it was a very specific kind of stone that's really not well reported in any other species, really. Dogs, sometimes you get them infrequently. Humans get them, but mostly in third world countries where they're eating a lot of fish, purine-based foods, and also have a component of dehydration due to their environment or socioeconomic status. So dolphins, it was a really unique kind of stone to study. And in an animal that eats a purine-rich diet on the regular. So what really are we doing different under human care? So we picked out different things that encourage stone development in any species. And those were purines, looking at the purine content of the fish and whether or not it differed between their wild diet and the diet that we feed them under human care. And the what I'm going to call DCAD, which is the dietary cation anion difference, which is essentially the balance of minerals in the fish. And that balance of minerals can affect the urine pH and then the things that precipitate out in the urine and cause those stones to develop. So those were the two kind of big takeaways from my PhD work. And it turns out in continued work with the foundation that I've done, the DCAD might be the even more important factor than purines.
So tell me a little bit more about that recent work.
Yeah, so we just recently published a study where we actually performed a feeding trial in some dolphins with kidney stones to look at the effect of the DCAD, again, that dietary cation anion difference, and the effect that it has on the urine if you manipulate that DCAD. So the goal is to increase the DCAD or make it more positive, which would produce a more neutral to acidic urine, which then modifies the production of ammonium that the kidney produces. So in the end, you end up creating less ammonium production, less excretion of ammonium in the urine at a higher pH, which would hopefully reduce the supersaturation of ammonium in the urine, potentiating development of those kidney stones. So kidney stones, you know, they take a long time to form. So we do have a goal of longitudinally following these animals and seeing how we can impact stone development over the longer term. But we do know that we positively impacted the urine in the way that we wanted to by manipulating that DCAD.
It's super interesting and such a practical means of studying nutrition and clinically helping dolphins. Okay, so obviously research is a huge component of what it means to be a nutritionist, but for your day-to-day now, what does that look like?
So I started my consulting company because I saw that a lot of facilities, sort of like the Sea Turtle Rehab Center in North Carolina, they're small and they don't have the ability to have a nutritionist there employed for them full time. And so I wanted to be able to reach as many people as I could and help them optimize the diets that they were feeding to the animals. So I kind of branched out away from just being aquatic and delved into the zoo. And that kind of helped me make my comparative nutrition future more well-rounded. So I started this consulting company and now work with facilities all over the United States and have been abroad working with the Singapore Aquarium as well to help them, again, learn about what they're doing, see what they do in practice, and see how I can help them improve upon what they're doing to help the longevity of their animals.
It's super cool, but that sounds extraordinarily daunting. I mean, even at a small facility, you have so many different animals, so many different species. And if you're consulting for all of these, how are you able to really keep track of what's happening and make an impact on all these different animals?
I'm still learning. You know, I'm in the fifth year of my business. And so I'm still kind of learning how to do the juggling, and time management is huge, and trying to just keep track of, you know, every facility and the animals that I'm working with at those different facilities and where I'm at in terms of progress. Because nutrition isn't just evaluating a diet at one point in time and then ending my recommendations from there and moving on. It's really about revisiting whether or not that plan worked, how the animal's doing on it, and what modifications need to be made from there moving forward to keep improving the health of that animal. So yeah, it's kind of, I'm always juggling, I feel like, and trying to keep up.
So for those listening who might be working at facilities that have nutritional questions, is it that you are helping with overall nutrition? Is it more we have 50 dolphins that we want to provide good nutrition for? Or is it more we have one dolphin that hasn't been eating well and only eats squid, but we can't just give it squid, or maybe we can just give it squid and we're going to know what we should and shouldn't do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it really varies depending on what the facility needs. I tend to gravitate toward wanting to help the individual animal and really looking at the individual animal's needs, because I think that's where you can kind of make the most impact. It's really hard when the animals are group housed. You're looking at this group diet that maybe is shared. In aquatics, it's a bit easier because each animal is generally hand fed their specific diet. So each animal can be treated as the individual, but looking at a group of animals, say at an aquarium, a stingray tank, a feeding exhibit, touch tank sort of thing, then it is more of a group strategy. And I have to go with you're going to do great for some and maybe underserve others, but it's a population medicine approach.
Gotcha. And so speaking of individual animal needs, is there a specific animal that you've been able to help where nutrition has really played a role?
So of course, I have definitely a few cases that I can pick out in my mind where I know that we really helped them by working to modify the nutrition plan. One specific animal was a North American porcupine. And again, everything in nutrition is so simple, but it's stuff that's easily missed. You don't have somebody focused on looking at it in a particular way. So she had been presented with this diet, had eaten this diet for a long time. It was quite sugary. And so maybe not entirely appropriate or the best option that she could be fed. So I worked with this facility to modify that diet and make it more appropriate for a North American porcupine, but it turns out she didn't really like it. So she stopped eating. And so she started losing weight. And this is where revisiting the plan is important, right? So everything looked great on paper. Everything I recommended was beautiful for that North American porcupine, but she gave it the big thumbs down because she no longer got the sugary stuff that she was used to eating and enjoyed. So it was really about working with the team to implement a better, more strategic plan to get her to like the new diet that we were presenting and accept it. So in the end, she did, and we were able to work with her, but it took months of kind of convincing her that this was the better diet for her to be eating. And a lot of what I do on a regular basis is working with the teams to figure out what's going on for real. What is that animal doing and how is it responding to the recommendations that I've made, and what can we do to tweak those to make their life better? And, you know, I know what I should be eating on the regular and I don't eat it, you know, necessarily. So I think there's the perfect way and then there's the realistic way that we have to feed them to keep them as healthy as we can, but also their lives being enriched.
Do you use a lot of pellets for animals like porcupines?
Yeah, we do. In aquatics, almost everything we feed is a whole food source that's complete in and of itself, right? So dolphins are fed a whole fish. And while fish differ, fish species to fish species, we've found more and more these differences that exist between fish species. It's still a whole food item, whereas porcupines are out foraging for all different things. And so it's really a lot more difficult to meet their nutritional needs with all these different components that we have to put together. So the complete feed allows us the opportunity to include all of the trace minerals and vitamins that maybe we would lack if we were trying to piecemeal it all together. So yeah, I would say the base is generally a complete feed.
You also have done some work, both clinical case and some research with an eel.
Yeah. So I was particularly interested in the green moray eels and the opacities that they had on their eyes. They had a cloudy appearance to their eyes. And we started to think about this and investigate what the issues might be. We started doing serum chemistries and trace minerals, including iodine and some of the vitamins. And in doing so, found really high cholesterol and triglycerides and crazy high iodine concentrations in their serum, which we don't still know what that means, but it's really interesting to see. And then I was able to work with Dynasty to get wild eel samples from juvenile wild eels that they were catching for the aquarium industry. They were great at helping me gather that information. And then I expanded the survey because I know what we feed to these eels and I know what their serum values are. And they look high and then they have these corneal opacities. So I reached out to a couple of others that I knew, North Carolina and the South Carolina aquariums, and they provided me with their information. And again, doing a comparative look at what they were feeding versus their serum values, I was able to hone in on what feeding practices might be better. Again, it's a little bit subjective in that I didn't perform any feeding trials to see for sure, but it looked like feeding more shellfish potentially could help lower their cholesterol and triglycerides and just in general, maybe more variety as well. So yeah, that was a pretty interesting case and I'm continuing to work down that path. I have a goal of publishing that data. There are a few other facilities that I'm working with now where I'm looking at those same values. So I'm just continuing to gather that information and load it into my database and it'll actually probably improve the paper in the long run because I'll have more information to compare it to. So,
and are you just looking at one species of eel or are you looking at a few different ones?
I looked at just green moray eels for now. I did just compare a couple of others, some of the smaller species, but there weren't enough of them to really make a big claim as to what it looked like. So for now, just green morays.
Well, and it's such a great example of you go from porcupines, you know, probably in the morning to eels, and it could be simple fixes that end up making such huge impacts on these animals.
Yep, definitely. Yeah. And I think I mentioned before about teamwork being a big part of this. I tend to come in with this fresh set of eyes and I'm gathering information from the veterinarians and I'm gathering information from the aquarists or the keepers and I'm piecemealing it all together and seeing it in a more maybe global way, trying to piece it all together, the husbandry, the nutrition, the management, feeding strategies, and all of that play into improving the nutrition, quote unquote, of that animal.
Do you have one piece of nutritional advice that you'd like to tell people or something that you learned that people should know?
How about my biggest pet peeve?
Perfect.
Is a lack of weights on your animals. I think every facility should have the ability to weigh their animals. It is such an important tool for just knowing the animal's health status. We can try and body condition score visually all of these animals, but in the end, it's an objective measure that we need to be able to know if we're feeding appropriately. And so that is a big one. And I think every facility should invest in a scale.
So important. And we've all been places where you're trying to weigh a 700-pound marine mammal. So
yes, right. It can be done. That is a bit more difficult. But the green moray eel, for example, it's tricky, right? They're long and they're slimy and their skin is sensitive. But there are ways to adapt and you have to be creative. But to come up with those weights is important. From a nutritionist perspective, where everything is based on calculating how much the animal's eating, how many nutrients it's getting. Yeah, that's a big one.
For students who might be interested in nutrition or just learning more, and as we already hinted to before, there really aren't that many opportunities nowadays for students to find these things. What recommendations do you have or resources available that they can go to?
So to kind of plug some organizations that I think would be helpful for you guys to join, the Nutrition Advisory Group of the AZA is fantastic. They have a lot of awesome resources on their website. And then their conference is in conjunction with the AAZV conference every other year. So that would be a great avenue for learning more. The Comparative Nutrition Society is another group that's great. The Nutrition Advisory Group, or the NAG, we call it, tends to be more clinically focused. The Comparative Nutrition Equestrian Society is a bit more research-based and scientific, but they also have a great conference that happens every other year in the off year of NAG. And there are some great individuals on their board too that you could reach out to get more information about the field. And then specifically for aquatics, Lisa Hoops at the Georgia Aquarium. She's a fantastic resource. Scott Williams at Disney's The Living Seas is an awesome resource. There's very few nutritionists in the aquatic realm. So the ones that are here are ready and willing to chat. So please always feel free to reach out and pick our brains.
Well, thank you for those resources. We'll link those in the episode notes. So for anyone who's interested in learning more, there's a lot of great things to look out there. And to close, I know you've got a piece of advice that you like to share with students and aspiring veterinarians who work with you. So can you share that with our audience?
Yes, I'd love to. So a piece of advice that I received that helped me and has kind of stuck with me all along the way is to find your niche. In this industry of veterinary medicine, where we kind of become and are trained to be these sort of jack of all trades, find the thing that inspires you so that you can make an impact and know that you're making an impact on the field. So that's kind of the best advice that I received.
Well, Dr. Ardente, thank you so much for being here today on Aquadocs.
Thank you, Michelle. It was great. I appreciate it.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Aquadocs. I'd like to thank Dr. Amanda Ardente for being on the show this week, our sponsors WAVMA and AAFE, as well as all of you, our wonderful listeners, for tuning in. As always, check out our Facebook and Instagram to stay up to date on the latest Aquadocs news. And if you got an extra moment, please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and leave a review. I'm Michelle Greenfield. Stay healthy, stay safe, and we'll see you next time here on Aquadocs.